This week on the Zone of Truth, Griff and I discuss homebrewing werecreatures into 2E for Bestow Curse, revisit popular segment Banger Battle with Paizo's Monster Core, and of course, answer some listener questions. I'm your host, Steve, in the studio with your GM and my co-host, Griffin. Roll a will save. You're in the Zone of Truth. We're back.
Yeah, we're back.
Yes. Happy Saturday night, Griff.
Happy Saturday night.
It's been quite a day.
It's been a really long day. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Another Zone of Truth record at the end of a long one. Today was, I don't know, we all did our own things in the morning, and then it was Bestow Curse recording day. We recorded two episodes, some chunky ones.
Yeah, I think like 5 hours of recording.
Yeah, I think it was two in the first one, about three in the second. Obviously, it'll get cut down a lot, but this was the combo two-episode battle of the post-Blood Pig stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So we're not going to spoil that, of course, but there's some craziness going on.
Yeah, it was wild.
Mm-hmm. I think going into this, you had mentioned that this was the biggest 2E game, or rather 2E combat you've ever run slash played in.
Yeah, 27 combatants, man.
Yeah, that's no joke.
It's a lot.
Yeah, not counting animal companions and gaikins and the like.
Yeah.
How you feeling after that?
Oh, man, I'm having a whiskey. You know, it's a lot of brain power for 5 hours. So I'm just ready to relax.
Yeah, likewise. And I think this is going to be a pretty chill app. Let's just get it started with something easy. What you been up to lately, man?
Oh, you know, Haley and I have been watching Delicious in Dungeon, as we've talked about. We're caught up on that. I feel like the last episode was like the finale of the season, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But God, that show's been so good. It's been really fun to watch. It gives you a lot of good ideas for like world building. It's pretty cool.
Oh, cool.
And beyond that, I've still been playing Anode Heart. Been playing that a lot. It's my main game right now. I've been looking for maybe something else to play, but I haven't really picked anything else up. And you know how that is when you like browse Steam just like fall down a rabbit hole of stuff. The only other thing I've been looking at, and it's because it was like a huge hobby of mine in high school, and then I kind of stopped doing it for the longest time, but I used to modify Nerf guns.
Okay.
And it was something on like TikTok, I think, that like reintroduced that Nerf modding community back to me, you know, 10 plus years later.
Now, for the folks at home, what does modding Nerf guns mean? Are you making them more powerful?
Generally,
clip size?
Yeah, generally you're making them more powerful. So the most basic modification you can do to most Nerf guns is if they're like one of the plunger system blasters that, you know, you pull back and cock and then it fires. Most of them have like an air restrictor in them that keeps them safe for kids.
Mm-hmm.
So you take that out, you get a little bit more power out of them. Then the mods get more complicated. So some of them you're, you know, replacing the barrels. Some of them you upgrade the battery if it's like a flywheel blaster. Sometimes you upgrade the like wheels so that they can handle more speed. Sometimes you increase the seal, sometimes you throw in an aftermarket spring, but there's like a shitload of things that you can do to Nerf guns to make them better than stock. And what I've learned now is that with the prevalence of like 3D printing, people are posting files for like their own custom guns. And you remember that commercial that was like, you wouldn't pirate a, you know...
I know exactly where you're going with
so this.
This
is like, you can print a gun and put it together, and all you need aftermarket is like some of the barrels, because usually those are, if you're making a modded gun, usually those are like metal or PVC, and you need like springs and O-rings and that kind of stuff. But I've been looking at like some of the stuff that people have been making unique from Nerf, and they're like insanely cool.
Awesome.
I found one that's like a full 3D print that is this like lever action rifle that gets like, with the springs people normally use in it, like 170 FPS, which for like a dart gun is pretty substantial depending on like what you use it for. So I just like fell down that rabbit hole again and just started looking at all the stuff that's out there. And there's a crazy amount of people in that community that are like creating stuff, even folks now that are like printing stuff. It used to be that like before 3D printers, they looked like shit, but you get like an aftermarket blaster that was basically like a barrel, a trigger release, or like a lock and a trigger that released it, and like a plunger tube. And you'd pay somebody like $100 and they'd send you like the fully put together thing that was like, I don't know, it was like a front end loader and like sure. didn't take clips or anything. And now they're just insanely more intricate. So that's been kind of fun, just like looking back at where that community has grown that I kind of left behind so long ago.
Do you think you'll ever get back into it or maybe do some of that 3D printing yourself?
You know, I have a resin printer, but I don't have a filament printer. And that's, you know, they're a lot bigger projects. That's pretty sure. much what they're all made of. I don't know. That kind of feels finicky to me. And honestly, I've kind of stopped resin printing since we've stopped playing like off of Foundry.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably wouldn't print anything, but I might look for like one of the kits and just put it together.
Sure.
Depending on how expensive it is.
Yeah.
Some of them, I mean, like I've seen like fully put together stuff. They're like made of metal. Like some of them are like machined metal.
Holy crap.
Like have like a bunch of machined metal parts and they're like $500. I'm like, oh, holy crap. Like where did this come from?
Jesus, man. Well, that's really fascinating. As for me, you know, life situations be changing and I haven't really delved into a whole lot of new content. I'm burning through Vampire Diaries still on Resident Evil 4, playing the, I think it's called Separate Paths expansion where you play as Ada Wong, which is a lot of fun. Still rewatching Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, probably about 12 episodes deep into that now. Still on solo leveling. So all the same shit that I've been talking about the last couple times we've been on here. So I wanted to bring something new to the table. And it's kind of rare that I promote a podcast that we are not friends with, but I really, really love this podcast called Podcast The Ride. It is three different comedians that really, really love theme parks, and they do super deep dives on rides in theme parks in general, and then sometimes like really intense minutiae at or around theme parks. Every once in a while, you know, every few years, they'll do what they like to call a saga, where they go to an outdoor mall that's affiliated with a theme park, like a Downtown Disney or a City Walk, and go there every day for like 20 days and then release an episode of the podcast about it 20 days consecutively. And they'll chunk it up into bits and pieces. So they recently did the City Walk Orlando saga, which was 3 weeks long. And I stayed on top of it every single day. It was a lot, but it was so much fun. It was a blast. If you guys want something that you can just kind of listen to in the background and really have like a good time listening to some lighthearted stuff, maybe give it a shot. I mean, I'm not a theme parks guy, but it's just, they make it fun. That's all I got, man. That's all I got. Let's get into the meat of this episode. First of all, we're talking Where Creatures in 2E. So as of right now, as of recording, they're not in the printed material. We're going to, like last episode of the Zone of Truth, have some light Bestow Curse spoilers in here. Nothing that hasn't been released, so don't worry about that. But I think this is going to spoil 76, or at least something that happens in 76 of that. So just letting you know now. That said, let's get into it. So for those of you who don't remember or aren't caught up, you may have forgotten that Mir and Sylvie were bitten by were-rats at some point in, I believe, book 2 when we were investigating Bloodvale. And that's been something that we've been waiting to pay off for a while. At the end of Blood Pig, which we talked about last episode of Zone of Truth, the moon came out and they started transforming into were-creatures. So this is the payoff from several episodes ago. Let's talk about how you made this happen, Griff, because it doesn't exist today. So first of all, let's establish our baseline here. When we're talking were-creatures in 2E, specifically these were-rat templates that you put together for Haley and Emily, are we talking the Twilight or Vampire Diaries version of werewolves? I.e., are we shifting on command or only in the full moon?
So afflicted werewolves only shift on the full moon. So that's what Sylvie and Mir are. Mm-hmm. Natural werewolves can kind of do it at will.
Okay. So every 40 or 50 episodes, this will come back around.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, fun stuff. So at the very end of the episode where they started transforming, they started losing control as they started shifting. And tell me what's supposed to happen when that moon frenzy kicks off and what you did to prevent them going out of control.
So essentially, the character is supposed to be GM controlled after the transformation for afflicted were creatures. I obviously at this point didn't want that to happen because it's not fun to play in such a big combat and have your character controlled by me.
Mm-hmm. And you got plenty going on with your 40 people you were controlling.
Right. I have a lot going on. So I didn't want that to happen fully. So in the end of, I think, episode 75, you hear like Bingo and Bongo like blow this Belladonna dust on Mir and Sylvie. Belladonna is the same thing as Wolfsbane. Or I don't know if they're the same exact thing, but they both have like properties that are supposed to cure lycanthropy. Mm-hmm. In this case, because Eerie's Yellow Eyes is an alchemist, she's created this kind of, I guess I would call it like a alchemical dust that suppresses the losing control aspect of being an afflicted were creature. So I had them apply that to Mir and Sylvie, having it on them as part of Eerie's, like, where, I don't know what you call it, a warren, I guess.
Sure.
Part of her warren. They would have that on them. So it was a good thing you brought them. And that basically allowed me to say, okay, at the start of combat on their first turn, I'm going to have them roll a flat check. If they make it, they're pretty much good and control themselves. If they don't make it, they're going to be confused until they do. And I figured that was a decent way of balancing it. The combat was obviously very difficult, so I didn't keep penalizing. I think you could do that pretty easily, depending on what flat check you pick. But I figured a confusion mechanic would kind of make sense to allow them to keep controlling their characters, but add a little bit of an element of, like, hey, you don't have full control. You're a afflicted were creature, and it's the full moon. So that's kind of what I went with.
Yeah, sure. And I'm glad that you brought up Bingo and Bongo here, because as we talked about last time, when we got together here, we weren't really sure how we were going to fill out the 8-person roster, and we decided on bringing some were creatures. What would have happened if they didn't show up? Would you have still played this story beat, or maybe found a different way to make this work?
I probably would have just found a different way to make it work. Mm-hmm. This made sense, so that's why I kind of floated the idea when you were creating your team.
Yep.
But you know, if it didn't work that way, I probably would have had like Eerie's like approach them or something before the fight to give them the stuff.
Yeah, makes sense to me. All right, so let's start talking about what this actually mechanically means. Did the 2E conversion of this AP that we're using offer any sort of template for were creatures? I mean, if we're fighting were rats, you would think there would be something, right?
I think there was the original 1E were creature template thing that, you know, 1E made extensive uses of templates, right? Mm-hmm. And so you could apply a lycanthrope template and then change it based off of what were creature you were. You know, you guys used them with Saw and Ikmer in Carrion Crown. Those existed, I'm pretty sure. Or there was something along those lines that you could use.
Yeah, I literally put on were tiger. Mm-hmm.
So that existed in 1E, and they said, you know, in the book, it's basically the same guidance Paizo always gives to afflicted were creatures in adventures, where it's like, this is going to make them stronger. You should probably take control of them on the full moon.
Sure.
Which is the same guidance they gave in Carrion Crown and the guidance they gave for Curse.
All right. So 1E has something in place for you to do this if you wanted to. What did you do for 2E? Let's talk about that.
So for 2E, there is kind of guidance on how to make a were creature. Obviously, you're making them at like full power at that point. I didn't really see that being a huge downside to an afflicted were creature. I mean, they get some cool stuff, but it's not like so overpowered that, especially for like a combat, I thought it would be, you know, I kind of wanted to give you guys a little boost in power.
Mm-hmm.
So what I used is, there's a third-party product called like Jam and Jax, and they do a lot of like NPCs and stuff, but they have a lot of templates for Foundry that are really nice. Ooh. So there's like, there's templates if you want to make a creature a rogue, or templates if you want to do this and that, the other thing. There's a were creature template, which is really nice because it just adds the things that Paizo recommends to an existing character. So your character has to be at like the level that, you know, you want them. And then you add this were creature template and it does some of the stuff behind the scenes. So what it adds is it adds like the were creature change shape, the were creature moon frenzy to their character sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And then the change shape is just like an ability that exists in Foundry. So it's all the things that happen when you change shape, like the
size increase. Like
the, yeah, exactly. Yeah. The polymorph effect. And then the moon frenzy is the size increase and the damage increase to the bite attack and that kind of stuff. So I can kind of walk through what they got.
Sure.
When you kind of add that template, obviously they get the curse of the were rat. So they have that and they can pass that on through their bite. They can also pass fill fever because they're were rats.
Mm-hmm.
They get low light vision if they didn't already have it. They get this moon frenzy thing, which I'll talk about in a second. They get scent. They get the ability to empathically communicate with creatures of their type, so other were rats or rats. And then the whole change shape thing is to become either a hybrid form or a full rat. Obviously, they can't control that because they're afflicted, so they're just going to the hybrid form.
Mm-hmm.
And then the moon frenzy is when a full moon appears in the night sky, a were creature must adopt its hybrid form. It can't change shape thereafter, becomes large unless it is already larger, and increases the damage of its jaws by 2. So every were creature gets, I mean, it kind of depends on the type of were creature, but most of the like mammalian were creatures get like a jaw and claw attacks. Then when the moon sets and the sun rises, they're fatigued for 2d4 hours. And again, this is the rider that Paizo has in there. The were creature is under the GM's control while under the moon frenzy. So that's a buff that you can just apply in Foundry.
Sure.
I believe some other things they got was they get weakness equal to their level to silver, which didn't really come up, but is something to consider. And then they got...
Can I pause you there for a second? Is that going to be across the board, or is that only when they are in their changed state?
When they're in their changed
state. Okay.
Changed state, yeah.
Good.
And then they get, again, in their changed state with like the moon frenzy and stuff, they get, I think it's 4 hit points per level.
Mm.
So they get a decent hit point boost. I think that brought like Mir up to 120 and Sylvie up into the like 140s. So it made them a bit tankier to kind of try and offset the silver weakness. An interesting thing is that at least the Jam and Jax template gives you like certain feats at certain levels. So the notable one for them, which I think Mir and Sylvie might have already had, is they get nimble dodge as a were rat.
Oh, yeah.
So other were creatures get different feats, but at level, if a were creature is level 7 or above by this template, they get nimble dodge. So they both had access to nimble dodge. The unarmed attack and the bite, I think, are, you know, because they then become large, are like a D6 and a D8 or something, but it's classic natural weapons.
Yeah.
At that point, I mean, you get a little extra damage when you're in the moon frenzy, but it's nice because you guys started this fight without any weapons. So that's kind of the crux of everything they got, which isn't, you know, to me, reading through that, it doesn't feel like a crazy power boost, but you know, it's fun.
No, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk about to wrap up this discussion, was how you felt this affected their builds specifically. So I think given this combat was big and there was tons of enemies, Sylvie being a martial melee character was really dominating with the enhanced reach and size.
Yeah.
Just commanded a big chunk of the battlefield. Probably a little less important for Mir, who was relying on spells and her bow a little bit. But even still, she's a flanking partner to a lot more people than she would be when she was a regular size.
Yeah. But I think that's a double-edged sword in a combat
this,
because you become a flanking target for so many more people in a mass combat when you're large.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to get a flank on you.
Yeah.
I think it was great when Sylvie could attack of opportunity people for trying to get up to her. That's obviously super helpful. but it's once per round. So there were benefits. There were definitely drawbacks. Nobody had a silver weapon, so I wasn't like penalizing it. So I think on the whole, you know, it would have sucked if they had gotten the confusion and started attacking you guys, but that didn't happen.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else you wanted to add to the discussion here before we bang or battle?
No, I think we could bang or battle.
All right. Sounds good. So, hey, I don't know that I need to do a whole lot up at the top here. You just heard an episode where we did this. We are, again, dipping our toes into the 2E Remaster Monster Core book. Again, that is consistent with all remaster rules. You have over 400 individual monsters in there, tons of new art, common animals, supernatural foes, the big stuff. It's a very cool book. And hey, now since last time we recorded, I have the physical copy of the book, so I'm going to be cracking that open. And in order to determine what we're going to be doing, we're going to be selecting a random number between 8 and 357, which are the pages that the monsters are on. And that's going to correspond to the monster that we're going to be talking about. So I hit the random number generator. We got page 220. Looking for something different, something interesting. Oh, we're in business.
Lenorm?
Crag Lenorm specifically. Looks like. So we've talked about Lenorms on this show before, I believe. These are kind of dragon-like creatures, but they're like slither around kind of like a snake, and they have two front arms. No wings or anything like that. The Crag Lenorm specifically is a creature 14, gargantuan size, has a draconic subtype here. What do you got?
So they've got regeneration. That's a nice bonus. Regeneration 10, deactivated by cold iron. Can't be hit by curses, fire, paralyzed, or sleep. And then they're weak to cold iron.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Curse of fire. You better not get burned after hanging out with these guys.
Why is that?
If you decided to battle and succeeded, you'd have to make a will save or gain weakness to fire 15 with an unlimited duration.
Ooh, that Ouch. Is a mark against battle there. I like their reactive strike, tail only. That's going to kick me over to page 359. I'm not doing that. But good to know that they have good use of their tail. You ever heard of a tail job, Griffin?
You know, in certain circles, yeah.
They can do that as a reaction.
Interesting.
Yeah. Serpentine monstrosity.
They've got some magma breath, which makes me think that, you know, maybe they don't use Listerine, but they breathe out a stream of magma in a 120-foot line. It's 12d6 fire damage and 4d6 persistent fire damage if you fail that save.
Yeah. Not one that you can really get down there with their constant six-level unfettered movement. They also have true strike. They do appear to have, oh, and here we go, tail job again. Improved grab on their tail strike. That's good to know. I think that's a pretty pretty good argument for a bang there, but I...
Yeah, I mean, you thinking bang?
You know, I think I'm going to go bang on this one, yeah.
I'm going to go battle, and here's why.
Oh, interesting.
Because if you defeat a Lenorm, you can become a Lenorm King.
Oh, sure. Now, okay, it's not just defeat, it's slaying. Okay, yep, so yeah, you have to kill it.
Well, or you...
Well, hold on a second.
King White Estrid claimed her crown not by slaying a Lenorm, but by beating him into submission, gaining a powerful and dangerous ally to help secure her rule.
Now, interesting.
I wonder what that means.
This could be a situation where you have the best of both worlds in a bang and battle situation.
Yeah, looks like it. Looks like it.
Wow.
Beat him into submission. Yeah, I mean...
Yum.
I guess the refractory period wasn't long enough before she became king.
Guess not. Well, all right, that's going to be a bang for me, a battle for you. Let's roll again. 18.
Oh boy, it's going to be an early booker.
We got a good one.
Oh, buddy.
Animated Broom.
Well, I think it's, yeah, I guess Animated Broom is the main one on here. There's a whole animated object section.
Actually, yeah, so I thought Animated Armor spilled over into the second page, but actually the entirety of Animated Armor is on this. So yes, we have Animated Broom and Animated Armor on the same page.
Imagine getting double teamed by this.
That's a dream.
So animated broom's a creature -1. Animated armor is a creature -2.
Mm-hmm.
And an animated broom can help you clean up your house.
That's good.
Or clean up after.
Yep. They are immune to all sorts of crazy stuff because they're constructs.
Yeah, I mean, you always want to default to bang when you hear something has hardness.
Yeah, that's a really convincing argument.
This melee attack is bristles. Plus dust. A creature hit by an animated broom's bristles must succeed at a fortitude save or spend its next action coughing. Even if hit by multiple dust attacks, the creature has to spend only one action coughing to clear the dust out.
I will say that's not necessarily a point in the bang category.
No, I mean, crusty, musty, dusty. Those are a couple of the categories you kind of want to avoid.
Yeah, those are good categories to be aware of. Animated armor, unfortunately, has me thinking, I'm in my Full Metal Alchemist rewatch here, about Ale, the animated suit of armor that follows around our titular hero, who's a child, so I'm not liking that. But putting that aside, I mean, this is basically an animated suit of armor that walks around and maybe get up to some hanky-panky with that.
See, I'm a little bit worried because both are mindless, which means they can't consent.
Yeah, that's true. But if it's mindless, does that matter? I mean, like, sex toys can't consent.
I guess you're right. I guess you're right. They're not animated. They're battery powered.
I guess.
They're animated by a different magic.
Is that not just animated with science rather than magic?
I guess so. I guess you could argue that.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm going to go bang on these.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you get a real good churn the butter going with that animated broom, so.
I will say, notably, the animated broom being a creature -1, I think this is one of the few that I could actually successfully battle.
Successfully battle it, yeah.
Like in real life.
Just fighting off a broom.
Yep. All right, do we want to take one more spin or should we go to questions?
I'm down for one more spin.
All right, it's still early in the episode. 237. All right, that's going to be a bang for me. This is an Awakener Naga.
A Vicar Mooney? I don't know how to say that.
Yes.
Creature 10.
Vicar Ramuni.
Let's see.
Vicar Ramuni.
They've...
Holy Beast.
A Holy Beast.
Yeah, this is basically like a...
It better have some holes.
Oh, I mean... Let's talk about it. So this is basically like a giant cobra creature wearing some jewelry and like a big old fanged mouth.
They are benevolent and wise teachers of people and places.
Mm-hmm.
Guide and nurture the world around them.
Impart a deeper understanding of right and wrong.
Deeper.
There's a story here on the side here about an old ruler over Vudra whose head got cut off and regrew as a serpentine body to become the mother of Nagas. That's interesting.
They've got breath of life, dispel magic, divine immolation, cleanse affliction, lightning bolt, fly, crisis of faith, holy light, mind reading, calm, noise blast, see the unseen, heal, protection, spirit link, daze, detect magic, frostbite, light, read aura, stabilize, and telekinetic hand.
My man.
That's
The melee tail strike imparts a coils of knowledge ability. Naga's grip is more spiritual than physical. You gotta succeed at a DC 25 will save or become grabbed by the tail until they escape.
I do think it's worth reading the coils of knowledge, even though it's not on this page. The Naga's grip is more spiritual than physical.
I just said that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I'm literally reading that.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're good. Keep going. But yeah.
I didn't hear the more spiritual than physical.
Please. More spiritual than physical. Boy, yeah. You can escape with an occultism or religion check. You can get out of that virtual tail job with religious story. Yeah,
religious crisis.
Huh.
I like that all their stuff is holy.
Yeah, that is cool. Cleanse affliction, so if you pick up something from another beast, this guy can clean it up for you.
Yeah, that's good. You know, this series is just a cesspool of other things.
Hey, you know, PSA, get tested, folks. And hey, sometimes you got to get tested upstairs and downstairs, too. There are certain bacterial infections that stay where you play. Just throwing that out there. PSA. So this creature also does mind reading, calm. So a little
The calm is pretty good for like a post-coital chill.
I feel like it'd be a very generous lover.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting at here, I think. That's what I'm picking up from what it's putting down.
I think this is just like such an easy bang.
Yeah.
This is the whole one.
I agree. I'm not going to battle it.
No way. We got work to do. All right. Well, anything left on the Naga?
I don't think so.
Great. What a successful segment. Let's move on to some listener questions. First one is from the Redacted Demon. This is a question for Griff about a recent Skull and Shackles episode. So maybe minor spoilers if you're not caught up, but this is a relatively recent episode. Probably came out about, you know, 3-4-ish weeks before the drop of this episode. For Griff, how do you decide the dead crewmates? So this is in reference to when the Man's Promise was plundered by the Wormwood. Was it random? Planned? Just wanting to make Crust feel bad about being racist? And of course, in reference to the death of the rat folk and I guess Barefoot Sam's as well.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
I have them all on an Excel doc and I just did random number generator between 1 and 10 and anyone that got a 1 died.
Ooh, boy. So there's a reality where everybody dies.
Yeah, if the number generator was cruel.
Jesus. Who is all on that number generator?
Everyone but the officers and you guys.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's wild. Especially since you've been talking so much about how these crewmates could become NPCs through like the entire adventure.
There's so many of them. I could throw a couple away.
Probably for the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That answers that question nice and tidy. Next one up from 10 Lawn Gnomes, our buddy Eric asks, how would you add in Darklands content to Skull and Shackles? Asking for a friend. And I think my gut response, I'm sure that you've got an angle on this too, Griff, is that, you know, it's not too terribly far away from what Atlas is trying to do, in that he is trying to find the Cyclopses, the Golgon ruins, who he knows had contact with the Serpent Folk who came from the Darklands. So you could potentially either get going in that direction and get to the Darklands if you needed to, or if in contact with some ancient ruins or holdouts from a lost civilization, there could be a passage or a portal that things are coming through. I think the hook is kind of baked into the premise of the campaign, even if it isn't strictly a pirate thing, or at least into the premise of the setting.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly that piece of the Golgon stuff, which would be entirely homebrew if I put it into the campaign. It doesn't go there, folks. It's a pirate campaign. There's connections in some of the above ground oceans in Galarian to the, I don't remember the name of the subterranean ocean in one of the layers of the Darklands, but there is one. And that's like how all Gothus and stuff traverse between the Darklands and the surface. So potentially the group could get sucked into something like that as well, or look for something like that. Or Darkland stuff could come out of something like that, or, you know, whatever. It's a nice way to connect oceans, I guess. Most of that is in like the Arcadian Sea, but you could obviously pivot it to wherever.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's how I would do it, most likely, because I genuinely don't think you're going to find like a path to the Darklands on like an island.
Beyond the scope of that adventure path.
They just don't, it's not the real nature of islands. They don't generally contain like deep caverns into the center of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually like volcanically formed.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, so that's probably how I'd do it.
Sure thing.
But for the record, I absolutely do not want to do that.
Let's get out ahead of this.
Yeah. No interest, folks.
All right, and final question for the night. Usually we try to end on something kind of fun. This one may be a little bit more serious, a little bit more introspective about the podcast in general, coming from Leather Lad. This is a little bit of an older question, December of 2022. Is there any point where you've regretted sharing your lives with the internet? And I did want to put this in here because I kind of don't. Like, we've generally attracted really, really good fans, really good, really good listeners, people who have been very friendly and supportive of our show, but generally haven't overstepped any boundaries. Nobody has shown up on any of our doors or mailed us something really weird or creepy or stalked any of us. And that was a little bit of a concern. Like, I was, you know, everything is everywhere on the internet these days. It probably wouldn't be insanely difficult to find out, you know, some very personal details about people on podcasts, whether that's like their home address or their work address or something. And people have not been doing that. So thank you for not being shitty and weird about this.
Yeah, I think I agree. The only thing I would add is that, like, I think there's something about being content creators on the internet that I think there's like a natural reaction for some people to kind of be like, I want more content, like bring more content, do more content. And it's been nice to be able to like actually talk to people on like a Discord server so that they see us as people.
Yeah.
A lot more than I think people that don't really connect with their community as much have. I think there's always going to be that space where it's like, oh, you guys should do this, you guys should do that, you guys, and it's like, we don't have we don't have time to do that, we all live lives.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing about like being a content creator online that kind of just comes with the territory. Like, if people like your content, they want more of your content. And the reality for a lot of content creators is that you just like, you don't do it for a living, so you don't have time to do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's a little bit of like a reality check with the like online community is like, okay, and you're new, you don't know us yet. We all work like full-time jobs and do all this. And that's actually been kind of one of the nice things about connecting with people online, but on like a deeper level than just listening to the shows, is that they know us, they get to know us. You know, we're friends with a lot of the people that listen to the show just because we talk to them all the time. And that leads to like a better understanding of like, hey, I wouldn't tell my friend to like do this all the time because they don't have time for it. I'm not going to tell these guys to do that because I know what their life is like a little bit. So I think that's been kind of cool. Again, we really don't have shitty fans, which is a blessing. So, you know, there are people that listen to us online that like never really interact with us that sometimes leave shitty comments. Like we've especially gotten like a lot of comments on like Skull and Shackles and that kind of thing. You know, shitty people making shitty comments about like Brooks picking a non-binary character or whatever. And it's like, I know that stuff exists online, but I'm really glad those people haven't gone the extra step to like find our community and be in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, generally the people who have been shitty about that, it really usually just stops at a review where someone will post something shitty and walk away from it, which, you know, whatever. I'm not going to lose any sleep about that. But if that person then like tried to weaponize their shitty corner of their internet that they like to hang out in, or, you know, try to find out personal details or hop into our community and start up shit, that would be a problem. We've been very blessed that that really hasn't happened. And it has, if it ever has happened, has just stopped at like a shitty comment and someone has walked away. So we've gotten pretty lucky, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, part of that's probably because we're at the size we are. Like we're,
yeah,
we're not like Critical Role or something. Like, I'm sure they have some regrets about having a ton of their stuff online because there's several magnitudes more people seeking their stuff out and wanting to like form a parasocial relationship with them or whatever. But because our stuff is the size it is, you know, we can still like kind of manage to be friends with our listeners. And
yeah,
I like that.
It has been great. I've really enjoyed it. I've learned a ton from our listeners. I've been exposed to a lot of new things. A lot of people who listen to this show especially have recommended stuff to us. Like,
yeah,
new Monster Hunter games you might be interested in, Griff, or like horror movies that I might be into, or like metalcore music. Like, we've been able to share that type of stuff. And so it has been a net benefit, I believe, to like our experience. So I haven't regretted it yet, is what I'll say.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I will. But yeah, all good. And that's kind of why I wanted to close on it. Not because, you know, it is a little bit more of a serious question, but it is one that I think we have a generally positive answer for.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's wrap this thing up. So the only thing left to plug really is the big Poseidon's Bounty 4 coming up. Fin 10-10. It's going to be April's live Zone of Truth on the Discord to the $10 and up patrons Saturday, April the 13th at 4 p.m. Eastern. We're going to release it in audio on the main feed on April 22nd. We are locking in some fun stuff for the show. We are going to be trying, I believe, 20 different cans of fish.
Oh boy.
Yep. And I think we're going to have a special guest joining us. Are we, Griff, do we know this yet?
Oh, I don't know if we know for sure.
Okay, so that's a maybe. I mean, it sounds like a big tease. It's just one of our friends. It's not
just like another idiot that wants to eat fish.
Yeah, not like a celebrity or anything. But it is going to be a fun event. And I really look forward to hanging out with folks on that and just having the time. These Poseidon's Bounties are always just a blast. I really enjoyed doing them. They're goofy as hell.
Hopefully we don't get too sick.
We are going to get sick, but it is what it is. Too sick, I guess, is something that we want to avoid. But in the meantime, I think that wraps us up for today, Griff. Is there anything that you wanted to say to the listeners at home now that you've succeeded, you will say made it out of the zone of truth?
Not really. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right. Get ready for the fish. Later.